your need-to-know cultural snapshot of Wisconsin and beyond. This is What's on Tap with Sandy Max, sponsored by Visit Milwaukee. A deep dive into all things intriguing, riveting, and entertaining. Now, here's your host, Sandy Max.
How are you? Thank you so much for joining me for What's on Tap. It is a super-sized episode, and I'm excited about it. I'm excited to be here anytime with you. What's on Tap, sponsored by Visit Milwaukee. 3 hours of culture and creativity to share together, including special guests. And a shout out to the people on their way to see Benson Boone at Fiserv Forum tonight, watching him do his backflips and sing. And a shout out to people. Big hello to the humans and dogs on their way to tonight's first Milwaukee Night Market of summer 2026. Plenty of time to enjoy the big block party on Wisconsin Avenue right now. From Family Pet Foods are bringing the Bark After Dark theme. Plenty of treats in the VIP lounge, the very important pet lounge, ice cream for dogs. But humans can also find ice cream treats from Ben & Jerry's at the Baird Center Community Commons, which is now a new space that is activated for Milwaukee Night Market. It is one of the happiest places to be. We've been watching them set up outside 3rd Street Market Hall all afternoon, including the big MKE white letters that are perfect for getting a photo opportunity. DJ Shauna is going to play a set. Hundreds of vendors, arts, crafts, food, all to enjoy and browse on a beautiful night. Before we launch into our summer ween debate, whether you're a weenie or a waiter, here's a preview of what you can enjoy on tonight's What's on Tap. At 6:35, I'm very excited to share with you an encore of my interview with Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Buddy Guy. He is just a treasure. Buddy Guy 90, that is the name of his tour because, yes, going to be 90 years old. I wonder if today's his birthday, but like right this week is his birthday week, and he's going to celebrate Sunday at Milwaukee's Riverside Theater. You will hear a conversation with him at 6:35 plus. One of his greatest blues tunes is The Song You Need to Hear. And after the 7 o'clock newscast, award-winning chef from Amalinda, Chef Gregory Leone, is going to join me live in the studio to share his experience being the subject of a new documentary. Humble Kitchen is going to release tomorrow for streaming, and you get to know Chef Gregory Leone and his very interesting journey and just how community-focused his whole life has been. So I'm looking forward to welcoming him to the WTMJ studio just after 7. And plus, Milwaukee's creative new mural of baseball legend Hank Aaron and reviews of the film of the summer, The Odyssey, by some familiar voices on WTMJ. And you have two chances to win for King and Country tickets for their August 10th concert at the Wisconsin State Fair Bank 5-9 main stage during tonight's What's on Tap. And in the bonus third hour, author T. Krulos, he's going to join me in the WTMJ studio to share the bizarre story of the Phantom Patriot, a criminal obsessed with conspiracy theories. T. Krulos wrote a book about this called American Madness and has now become a documentary that's going to screen next week at the Avalon Theater. So you will hear this fascinating, disturbing, sobering story and how it is still relevant today and just why it fascinated T. Krulos in the first place to write a book about it. 3 hours packed with music, movies, food, history, giveaways, and great conversation. Starting right now with you and your opinion on mixing the seasons. Have you heard of summer ween? I have. It's either one of those things where you're like, oh yeah, I keep seeing it all the time on social media, or you're like, I've never heard of this before. So if you've heard of it and you have an opinion, I'm calling you a weenie or a waiter. You're a weenie if you lean all the way into Halloween. It's not a derogatory comment. It's just funny. You're a waiter if you would much rather wait for October for Halloween. We've got pumpkin spice probably coming next month, but already here you're seeing orange, black, and purple mixing in with the red, white, and blue, especially at the big stores, you know, like your Costco's and maybe even your grocery stores as you walk in. And if you're wondering how Summerween got its name, there was a cartoon on Disney called Gravity Falls almost 10 years ago, between 2012 and 2016. And it was Mabel and Dipper, the twins, on summer vacation. They traveled to a small town in Oregon, and they had a great uncle, their Grunkle Stan. And his description is he loves Halloween so much, they celebrate it twice a year. So think, you know, like Festivus from Seinfeld, Galentine's Day from Parks and Rec. Like, yes, this is one of those holidays that isn't really a holiday, but it is. But if you embrace it, so I just mentioned to Jen Gregg, WTMJ newscaster, just before she left, I said, hey, are you a Summerween person? She's like, oh, Code Orange on TikTok. She decorates 365 days a year. She has gargoyles decorations. So like, if you are into Halloween, I feel like you're really into this. And so the twist on this for summer is it's more lighthearted. For example, you will see like pastel colored jack-o'-lanterns, and maybe you want to carve a watermelon instead of a jack-o'-lantern. But you know, I love a theme party. I just also don't love, like, there was back to school stuff before July 4th. So now you've got Halloween before. We haven't even gotten to the state fair yet. You know, it's like, I'm not craving that. I still like the heat. I like the fun. So are you a weenie or a waiter? The Siding Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line, 855-616-1620. Weenie, leaning all the way into Halloween for Summerween, or waiter? Rather wait till October when it's autumn and you want to lean all the way into that chill and the spookiness. There are some Summerween events to share with you. I also think about ghost stories around the campfire, but that's not Summerween. That's just a good, you know, spooky summer tradition. So where are my Summerweenies at? I'm looking at you. You are the person who got excited to see Halloween decorations in the stores before July 4th weekend. You are the person who even bought new decorations not to hang them up on October 31st. Summerween, are you in? Convince us. The Siding Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line, 855-616-1620. Let's have some fun with Summerween on this evening on What's on Tap. You're hearing music from A Nightmare Before Christmas. Yet another mashup of holidays, Christmas and Halloween together. But at this time of year, Summerween is something that has caught on. It was a made-up holiday in a Disney cartoon. And now, after the past 2 years, it has really taken off, partially due to social media. WTMJ's Jen Gregg was telling me that she's very excited on TikTok when she sees the words Code Orange, because that means there's going to be some sort of a Halloween-themed video attached, or some exciting product that you can enjoy. And it is interesting, just the history of Summerween, and just, well, I wouldn't even say the history, but just how fast it's grown. For example, Bath & Body Works, they have a whole Summerween 2026 line. It's a spooky carnival collection. And their returning favorites, Vampire Blood, Ghoul Friend, and Wicked Vanilla Woods. But their new scents for Summerween, Ice Cream Float and Candy Apple Cauldron. And I'm telling you, like, there are some people right now who are like, oh my God, this is great. But I will tell you that most of the people I asked around the WTMJ office were confused or like, hold on. No. I don't want that just yet. I like the chill in the air. I like the sweater weather when it comes to Halloween and that kind of vibe. I've been asking if you're a weenie or a waiter. 414 texted in on the Siding Unlimited WTMJ talking text line. Definitely a waiter. So wants to wait for October for Halloween. Isaac, I feel like you could be in the generation where you might be a weenie, leaning all the way into Halloween. Isaac Marquardt, producer, are you a weenie or a waiter?
As big of a Gravity Falls fan as I am a waiter. I need that cold chill in the air first before I can really get into the Halloween spirit, I think.
I think I'm on board with that. Like I said, I'm not ready for red, white, and blue and orange and black all together. But if you were going to embrace Summerween, you do have some opportunities. It looks like Chill on the Hill next Tuesday in Bayview at Humboldt Park has some sort of a Summerween, maybe tent or activity. But Bristol Renaissance Fair, I think this is fantastic. The first weekend of August, August 1st and 2nd, it is Summerween at the Bristol Renaissance Fair. And if you have ever been, people love to dress up and be part of the fun there. So you can, and they also are encouraging costume mashups like the Princess Bride of Frankenstein. So if you really want to embrace your Summerween, sounds like the Bristol Renaissance Fair, the first weekend of August. And then I also like this at X-Ray Arcade in Cudahy, they're having a Twilight Saga movie trivia, which I think that qualifies, because Summerween isn't full on supposedly, you know, like ghost jumping out at you. You've also got Lakefront Brewery, who I feel like they have pumpkin beer on their tappers all year round. And also, I picked this up, funny enough, over the weekend at Oak Creek Library, 30 Haunted Nights, exploring Wisconsin's Haunted History. That is July 25th at the Oak Creek Library. So you can dabble in Summerween, it sounds like. And of the people that I asked that, here we go. 414 texted in, not just waiter, but waiter with like 5 exclamation points. Just stop already. Blending Thanksgiving into Christmas is about as far as I get. But after that, each holiday, you need 7 to 10 days of decorations and themes. 262 texted in, code orange is Home Depot's Halloween decorations are for sale. And I wish I could remember who told me that they walked into Home Depot. It was my teammate, Marilee, who told me she went to Home Depot and everything was Halloween. There was an entire section. One of my teammates, Tim, passionate waiter. I love how holidays denote different seasons and times of the year. With that being said, I'm never opposed to a piece of candy, regardless of the time of year. I can see that. Another waiter in my office is Jill, not feeling the Halloween decor until sweater weather arrives. Each season, enjoy it as it comes, but she does have an exception. Christmas in July, she said, because who doesn't love to catch up on the Hallmark Christmas movies that we missed? So we are just blending the seasons. So are you a waiter or a weenie for Summerween, celebrating the spooky season here in July? Maybe it's as simple as just watching, you know, like Friday the 13th or one of the summer horror movies. But I do have a full-on weenie in my office. His name is Tony, one of my teammates. He wrote any and everything that can give us a glimpse into a perfect crisp fall night with bonfires, football, and a little extra fireball in the apple cider is A-OK in my book. Celebrate, you ghouls and goblins. See, he is weenie. He even wrote it like that. And then another weenie in our office is Dean and his wife. Dean says his wife has Halloween decorations up all year round because it is her very favorite holiday. 6 mini skeletons, even a Ouija board welcome mat, and a piece of artwork that has a ghost on a toilet. So they are embracing the humor and fun of Summerween. So if you are a weenie and want to convince the rest of us to be embracing Summerween, go ahead, give us a call or a text on the Siding Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line. Or if you're a waiter and you think everyone should just hold their horses until October, I welcome your comments as well. Thank you very much for the participation so far. Got Wisconsin State Fair concert updates for you next on What's on Tap.
This is What's on Tap with Sandy Max.
Something that has overtaken social media and some of the biggest stores in our area is Summerween. Maybe you've walked in, even just to the grocery store, and went, why am I seeing Halloween candy? Why am I seeing decorations? It's a fun thing. It's a fun theme called Summerween that some stores, even one of the fragrance stores, is leaning in with a carnival theme, a spooky carnival theme with different flavors and scents. And I've been asking you on the Siding Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line 855-616-1620, the summer debate. Are you a weenie or a waiter? Are you a Halloweenie? You just love the season and celebrate it anytime, especially in the summertime. Why not? Or are you a waiter? You're like, no. Halloween is meant for October. So I have met a weenie and she's in the studio with me. WTMJ's Jen Gregg. When I mentioned Summerween, you lit up.
Oh, I am a proud weenie. As soon as July 5th hits, Halloween decorations everywhere. I can't wait. I love it. I always have random Halloween decorations inside my house. So when I go into stores and I can just pick off everything on the shelves, I'm in love.
Do you have a particular theme that you like? Ghosts or vampires or anything?
Well, it's kind of funny because I love clowns. And this year, there's a huge swing in clown and carnival Halloween decorations. And I'm losing my mind. I'm losing my money. I absolutely love it.
What's your latest acquisition for Summerween?
Ooh.
You might have to go to Bath & Body Works.
Yeah.
Because that's where the spooky carnival collection is. But yeah, what have you gotten since July 5th? It's now July 22nd during Summerween.
Oh, I have another gargoyle I just got. It's not clown themed, but yeah, I got another gargoyle. So I think I have 12 gargoyles now in my house. I'm always looking for more.
You are our Summerween queen so far here at WTMJ.
Oh, I'm in love with it. I've always just been that way. I love Summerween, where I'm not someone who likes dark colors, where in summer, everyone has bright colors. And like I said, I love clowns, love the color of clowns. And Summerween is just a pop of color in Halloween. I love it. It's the perfect mix for me.
Or a skeleton in a Hawaiian shirt. You can go lean all the way in. She is Jen Gregg. You will hear her again shortly with the WTMJ news update. But lean in if you want to share your weenie or waiter opinion on Summerween. The Siding Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line is 855-616-1620. And something that sounds like summer is this sound.
Round, round, get around, I get around. Yeah,
and
get
unfortunately, around, the bummer is the Beach Boys have canceled their Wisconsin State Fair closing night concert. The press release went out about noon today. Wisconsin State Fair officials regret to inform fairgoers that the Beach Boys concert scheduled for Sunday, August 16th on the Bank 5-9 main stage has been canceled. The official Beach Boys statement is, playing for you is the highlight of our summer every year, especially as we celebrate the 250th anniversary of the United States while saluting the 60th anniversary of Pet Sounds. We've been having a blast out there, and to keep the good vibrations going strong, we'll be taking a short break. So unfortunately, that's a bummer. There will not be a replacement act rescheduled at the Bank 5-9 main stage, and the State Fair is going to begin issuing refunds shortly if you had tickets already. Looking forward to the Beach Boys concert. Don't worry, there are plenty of other shows on the main stage. The Isley Brothers, Hairball, Nelly, Bailey Zimmerman, Winona Judd, Melissa Etheridge, John Mulaney for comedy, the All-American Rejects, Lindsey Stirling, and for King and Country, who are performing August 10th, and you will have two chances on this show this evening to win those free tickets. So stay with me here on What's on Tap. And right now we do go to the WTMJ Breaking News Center for updates. Here is Jen Gregg.
What's on Tap with Sandy Max is back on WTMJ.
Welcome back to What's on Tap, sponsored by Visit Milwaukee, handcrafted, homegrown, world-class. Discover more at visitmilwaukee.org. And my next guest is more than a blues legend. It is my honor to talk with one of the most influential guitarists in music history, a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee, Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award recipient, Kennedy Center honoree, and National Medal of Arts winner. Buddy Guy helped shape the sound of modern blues and inspired artists from Jimi Hendrix, the Rolling Stones, Eric Clapton, Stevie Ray Vaughan, John Mayer. It's incredible how much his music has reached other musicians. And now, as he approaches 90 years old, he is still keeping the blues alive and bringing his incredible talent to audiences around the world, including right here to Milwaukee, Sunday, July 26th at the Riverside Theater. And damn right, I got Buddy Guy as my guest right now. How are you, Buddy?
Well, as an old man, I'm hanging on, you know. It's catching up with me, but I'm still having fun, you know, trying to make smiles on people's face by hopefully playing a good enough music for somebody to enjoy, you know, and that's what it's all about.
Oh, buddy, you are so humble. You are one of the most influential musicians, much less in the genre of blues, but you have inspired so many guitarists from back when you started, even now through today. So thank you for showing everybody that creativity doesn't just go away. At age 90, you keep on going.
Well, I don't forget, I have to get it from other people too now. I didn't learn nothing from the book, you know. I tried to learn how to play music before I left Louisiana almost 70 years ago next year. And I went to the music teacher, and I say, I want to learn how to play, to read music, and play the guitar more. And I had a 7-8 record by Muddy Waters. I had it behind my back, and the teacher said, yeah, I can teach you. Say, I got book one. And when he came out with the book one, I came out with the 7-8 of Muddy Waters' Rolling Stone. I said, I think I got book one. And he looked at me and put it on the turntable. He said, well, I can't teach you that. I said, well, I can't take your class. And you ain't going to believe it. I was here in Chicago, and my brother was still living. He called me and said, Mr. Johnson, the music teacher, is pretty ill. And he told me if I could contact Buddy, tell him I would like to talk to him. And I flew back down and went to the hospital. His eyes was closed, and I said, Mr. Johnson, he said, I think that's Buddy. And I said, I heard you wanted to say something to me. He said, yeah, I just want to let you know I'm glad you didn't take my class.
That's impressive that he recognizes that you have something special. Tell me the first time you ever picked up a guitar and it felt magic to you.
Well, to be honest with you, it didn't feel magic. The first time I had a guitar, born in Letchworth, Louisiana, that's out there on the plantation. And the guy, my parents and all the people go get this guitar player every Christmas, and they go from house to house and drank the gallon of wine at everybody's house, and they would go to sleep, and I would pick that old acoustic guitar up and see could I play with it. He was playing Lionel Johnson stuff and all the older stuff. I had never heard of an electric guitar back then. So I would pick it up and try to figure out what he had did, and one day my daddy was sawing logs. There wasn't no power saws, and then it was called, Howard King made a record called Crossbow Saw. You had to pull, I had to pull. And he gave that guy $2 for a guitar that had two strings on it, and that was my start right there.
Wow. Well, you got a long way from a $2 guitar with two strings. Now on Buddy Guy 90, July 26th, we are ready to welcome you back to the Riverside Theater. You were here a couple years ago at the Riverside Theater, and I love that any Buddy Guy show is memorable. Because, Buddy, I worked in Chicago radio in the 1990s at WXRT. So you know I spent a lot of time at Legends. And I saw you. You know, everybody does residencies now in Las Vegas. And I think you were the first artist to do a residency and at your very own blues club at Legends. And one of my favorite memories is right in the middle of January, you get your guitar and you take it outside and play for people in the street all around the block and then come back into the club.
Well, you know, you have to try to you know, people, it's funny, you know, I don't know if, I learned that from a great guitar player in Louisiana named Guitar Slim. He made a big record called Things I Used to Do. And I saw him with a 100-foot cord, and now they got the wireless, you know, remote. You don't have that long wire. And I learned that from him. I said, sometimes you might want to do something stupid, or maybe it's not stupid, just let people know that you into them. And sometimes I walk out there and let people hit my guitar and they don't believe it, especially young people. And when they do that, they just jump up and start screaming. That was me. I heard myself play his guitar. So anything to make people happy, because you know the whole world, I hate to turn my TV on because it looks like everybody in the world, somebody's angry, half of them don't even know what they're angry about. But music brings smiles on people's face that wasn't smiling until you played the right note or said the right word. That's what makes me sleep better at night.
Aw, that is truly good vibrations that you are continuing to share. And a belated congratulations on your 9th Grammy victory and a new statuette.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And I love the title. It sounds like you aren't finished yet. You're still swinging. What's the title of your album? Ain't Done with the Blues. So,
well, you know, to treat the blues now on your radio is like a stepchild. You know, you big, at my age, there wasn't no big FM stations. It was all AM stations. And the disc jockey could play what he want back then. He didn't have a program director that would give him one big superstar record, and you play that six times a day, and you never hear the late Muddy Waters, B.B. King. I could go on, Howlin' Wolf, one of these great blues players who did it all very well when their records was being heard on the big AM station at least once or twice a week. So, you know, that kind of hurts because the young people don't know who the blues players is until now. You can, when we play the outdoor theaters, you can bring a 9-10-year-old kid in there. And I have it all the time come up to me and say, I don't know who you was, but I read why Eric Clapton say you were pretty good. And then they look at me and say, he was right. You are pretty good.
You're still impressing people. Spending some special time with music legend Buddy Guy as he prepares to return to the Riverside to share those guitar sounds with us Sunday, July 26th. Keep it here on What's on Tap. I have more music performance questions and a movie question for Buddy Guy next.
Welcome back to What's on Tap on WTMJ.
I'm Sandy Max. It is my pleasure to continue this conversation with the immensely talented, influential, and humble music legend Buddy Guy from Louisiana to Chicago, playing with the blues pioneers and continuing to blow the minds of modern guitarists. Well, Buddy, what can we expect at your show on July 26th at the Riverside? Are you going to be showcasing some of those influences? Are you going to be showcasing some of your music?
Well, I'm from Louisiana. Do you know what a gumbo is?
Yeah. Tasty.
You know, they put everything in it. That was the thing the white man was throwing away. back in the days, and the black people made a gumbo, and that's the most expensive soup you can get. So I play my music called the gumbo. You know, you're going to get some of everything a buddy got that I can afford to give you. But I never will forget it. Whenever I come, I'm going to never say, I'm not going to give you a taste of muddy water or lick of B.B. King. And some of those people who created the music that led me to talking to you today. If it wasn't for them, I don't know if I'd be talking to you because I learned everything from them.
We love you here in Milwaukee. You're just down the road. When I say Milwaukee, do you have any good memories here?
Oh, yeah. I done played quite a few places. I never forget once I was playing there, it started storming, and everybody was going away, and there was a couple out there with an umbrella. And I was on the stage, and they didn't move, and it started lightning. I said, well, if you don't stand in this kind of weather, I'm going to plug my guitar and play in this stormy weather. So I went on and played 2-3 songs for them.
I wonder if that was Summerfest.
That's it. That's what it was.
That's one hearty couple who love the blues. Is that magic to you? If you can just connect with somebody, is that where the magic of a live performance comes?
Well, you know, I play by watching you. You know, when we start playing outdoors before the sun go down, and even when you play at night, if they light up that front 4 or 5 rows, I like to look in your face. If you got a frown on your face, something tell me, buddy guy, you ain't played the right note yet. Just move along, play another note, play another song, sing another lyric. And sooner or later, I see that frown leave your face and a smile come on your face. I say, I figured it out. I know what I need to do. I need to bend this string a little deeper.
What a beautiful job you have. Let's talk about you and your guitar playing.
You know, I don't never listen to Buddy Guy. I can't learn nothing on Buddy Guy. That's something I always know. I like to go out and I go to my club every night and I listen to other guitar players. And that's where I get ideas from. So if I'm sitting here in the room and fooling my guitar, I might accidentally run on something. But if I hear somebody else play something, I go and say, let me see, can I find that? And looking for that, I found something else sound good as that or might be better. So that's the way I go. I've been doing that ever since I fell in love with playing the guitar. I like to listen to other people, not Buddy Guy.
You are a lifelong learner. That is super. And as much as you are connected with the audience and giving smiles, what's a song that you play live where you feel like you truly shine, where we get to experience you?
Muddy Waters record, I'm a Hoochie Coochie Man. I get more smiles out of that than I do anything else. And sometimes they got another one about I love a woman and she's big and fat. And they start laughing. I say, what the hell wrong with that? And then I get a standing ovation, you know.
You're getting one right now. Buddy, before I let you go, we've been talking music. I do want to ask you a movie question. Oh, my gosh. As much as I enjoyed the movie Sinners and the themes it explored and all sorts of things about it, I loved seeing you in the film. That truly was the high point for me. It was such a surprise. It was such a delight. I loved that you were part of Sinners. How did that experience come to you? How did that come about?
Well, they brought it to me. I didn't know that. I ain't gonna lie to you and tell you I was ready for that. If they came to me and asked me, would I do that movie? And I said to myself, I would do anything to hopefully keep the blues alive. And there's not many old blues players left. If you listen to me, that's Willie Nelson, Bobby Rush, and Buddy Guy. And Buddy Guy will be 90 years old in 2 months. Bobby Rush is 2 years older than me. That'd make him 92. And I think Willie Nelson is 94 or something like that. So we talk about this last 4 old blues players trying to keep the blues alive. And I hope I'm asking a question. Because, you know, if you look at people, the whole world, if you look at some people, it seems like everybody's mad and don't know what they're mad about. Angry, I should say. But if you play the right note in music, that anger would leave for them. At least when you don't hurt them with that good note and that smile on their face, I say, if you was angry, I made you forget it for that moment.
Buddy Guy, keep spreading the good news of smiles and keeping the blues alive with your influences and now with the influence that you are bringing to people. Because as much as it's called the blues, you see it yourself that it really gives joy.
Well, thank you so much. And we need people like you to help me keep it alive.
It is my pleasure. Thank you so much, buddy. We look forward to seeing you July 26th back here in Milwaukee at the Riverside Theater. Take good care.
And make sure you come backstage and I'll give you a shot of my cognac.
Oh, it's a deal. That's a week after my birthday. I will be there.
All right.
Buddy Guy, what a joy and a gift to the music world. If you want to hear that interview again, keyword buddy, B-U-D-D-Y. Text the word buddy to the Siding Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line 855-616-1620. You text the word buddy to 855-616-1620. We'll text you a link so you can hear that chat again and share with your favorite blues fan. Sunday, Riverside Theater. Buddy Guy's going to play the blues, and he will definitely play the song you need to hear. It's a great one, and it's by Buddy Guy, next on What's on Tap.
And now, feast your ears. This is the song you need to hear.
Most blokes are going to be playing at 10. These go to 11.
Join me in celebrating a living legend. Buddy Guy hasn't just played the blues. He has helped shape the sound of modern guitar. He's inspired everybody from Eric Clapton to Jimi Hendrix. It's a really long list, including the Rolling Stones. The title track from his Grammy-winning 1991 album, Damn Right I Got the Blues, is bold, soulful, and kind of music that has made Buddy a music icon for more than six decades. Buddy Guy turns 90 next week. You've got the chance to see him live on his Buddy Guy 90 tour Sunday, July 26th at the Riverside Theater. Buddy Guy, Damn Right I Got the Blues, the song you need to hear on What's on Tap.
1, 2, 3, I got it.
Your need-to-know cultural snapshot of Wisconsin and beyond. This is What's on Tap with Sandy Max, sponsored by Visit Milwaukee. A deep dive into all things intriguing, riveting, and entertaining. Now, here's your host, Sandy Max.
Welcome to this second hour of a supersized episode of What's on Tap. I get to hang out with you till 9 o'clock, and in this hour, going to revisit the Hank Aaron mural reveal, hear from his widow Billy Aaron and Hank's longtime pal, former MLB commissioner Bud Selig, who were at the reveal ceremony yesterday. We're going to meet the man behind American Madness after 8 o'clock, the book about the Phantom Patriot, written by local author and historian T. Krulos, and now the documentary American Madness will screen next week, and you'll meet him in our bonus 8 o'clock hour of What's on Tap. But speaking of documentaries, get ready to stream Humble Kitchen starting tomorrow. Foodies know the name Amelinda, one of the very best restaurants in Milwaukee. Since the doors opened 11 years ago. Mm-hmm. Ooh, I thought we were coming up on the 10th anniversary. We're coming up on the 11th.
That was last year.
Congratulations. He is the award-winning Chef Gregory Leon with 4 James Beard Award nominations so far. He is the subject of the first episode of a compelling new docuseries called Humble Kitchen, and he joins me now live at the WTMJ studio. Sorry I shorted you just 1 year.
That's okay. That's okay.
That's 365 days in the restaurant business. What is, you know, you talk about 1 year is 7 years in dog years. What is 1 year in the restaurant business?
Ooh, like 10 years, 15 years, something like that. I guess it depends on the year that you have. It can vary.
Well, welcome back to What's on Tap.
Thanks for inviting me back, Sandy. It's always a pleasure to come talk to you.
Well, it's always fun to talk with you. I mean, I love talking with you about the flavors that you have at Amelinda. What's just a quick rundown, what's on the seasonal menu if I walk in right now?
Well, right now we have some really good Spanish mackerel. We have a fantastic brisket dish that's really good. It's been on the menu for about 3 weeks. It'll probably be on for another 2. It's really good.
I'll bet.
Yeah, it's. I'm really happy with this one.
I'll bet it makes Amelinda just smell wonderful, that aroma.
You know, the other day, because we smoke it inside in this apparatus we have, and I walked in and it smelled just like, it took me back. You know how smells can take you back to a place in time? So it took me back to Zuni Cafe circa like 1994, like my first job. The wood that we were using is the same kind of wood they use, and it just smelled exactly like it. So that was very pleasant. Yeah, it makes the restaurant smell like a barbecue joint.
But you're right. Smells do have such an attachment to memory and can take you to such a happy place.
Correct.
And I love that did that for you. So speaking of a happy place, we go to all sorts of places with you in this new documentary called Humble Kitchen. It's about 45 minutes long. Thank you for letting me preview it so I can talk with you even more articulately and, and accurately about it rather than just saying walk us through it, because I think it's such a journey. I want to, you can reveal what you want to reveal, but I would like for people to discover you through this documentary, which will be streaming starting tomorrow. Where can people watch Humble Kitchen?
So you can go to watchtodos.com. So that's WATCHTODOS.com. And it should be under the tab called Humble Kitchen. Now, this we were told it was going to be live tomorrow, so we'll see. We have no control over that. But
so watch Todos. And if you search Humble Kitchen, you will, I'm sure you will find it online. Todos Mio.
But if you go to watchtodos.com, that's where it will be.
We'll be sure to share that. And so in watching this documentary that follows you, shares your life's journey and through culinary the world, and we get to see a lot of Milwaukee. We get to come into your kitchen in Amalinda. But when you are talking in your home, you're very, very open and candid. And why open up so honestly about your life?
I mean, I've always been pretty open about my life. Not obviously to everybody, but like for the most part, people know who I am and, you know, what my life is about. But I figured, you know, if you're going to do a project like this, just go ahead and do the project. Just dive in. So, you know, what's the sense of holding back if this is supposed to be a documentary about your life? My hope also is that somebody might be in some of the same spots I've been in my life, which were probably not the best to be in. And maybe they can watch it and be like, well, if this guy was able to go from there to where he is now, then there's hope and it can be done. So maybe to help somebody.
And what level of trust do you have to have?
Yeah.
You know the cameras are rolling. Yeah. And so talk about how you got involved in this documentary.
So they reached out to me in the fall of 2024. And periodically I'll get emails from producers being like, oh, hey, do you want to come beat up Bobby Flay and all this stuff? And I'm usually no, because that's just not something that I'm interested in doing. And then this company.
It's always nice to be invited to the party.
It's very nice to be invited to the party.
I'm glad to know that producers do see you as that.
They do. And so they had sent me an email. I responded and I said, hey, I'm not quite sure this is what this is for me. They're like, yeah, well, can we get you on the phone? So they called me and I talked to one of the people who worked at the company. She's like, just meet Angel. So Angel is the producer and he owns Todos Media. He also owns a restaurant in Portland, Oregon called Republica, which is very well regarded.
Well, then he—that makes him an even better documentarian
chefs. Did a little research, and he's pretty legit. So I was like, okay. So we did a video call, and he's like, yeah, you're going to be on this. And I was like, I don't really want to. And he's like, no, you got no choice. So they came out. They filmed in December of 2024 for 4 days. They filmed in the spring of 2025, the summer of 2025, and then they just released it. But yeah,
Did Angel say to convince you?
I don't think he really said anything to convince me. He just didn't give me a choice.
He just said, we're arriving? He's
like, well, I thought about it after I got off the video call with him. And it's like, well, maybe ultimately it'll be good for the restaurant. It'll bring more people in, which means, you know, more dollars in my employees' pocket. So, and that's what we always try to, that's what we want.
What did he know about you that he wanted to share your story? He knew Amalinda's.
He knew about Amalinda. He knew, you know, that I was of Latin descent, that I'd immigrated to the U.S. when I was 19, that I was part of the LGBTQ community. He knew about the nomination. So he knew, you know, the stuff that's out there that, like, when you Google Greg Leone, you can find.
But he didn't know the harrowing personal stories of loss that part of your journey.
He didn't know anything. He didn't know about my mother. He didn't know about my substance abuse. None of that.
And interesting that he, like any documentarian, got more than he was bargained
for. He did. It's, you know, they did those scenes where you see us being interviewed. You know, they interviewed everybody the same day but separately. And so my interview lasted about 3 hours. And afterwards, we went out to eat. I was like, let's all go out to eat. So we're all eating. And at one point, he looks at me and he says, are you okay? You look like something's bothering you. And I was like, well, I actually feel like I'm sitting here eating with you guys naked. It's really how I felt. I was like, because I just spilled my whole life to you. And I know nothing about you people. So I made them tell me something about them during dinner.
That's smart.
Yeah.
And food brings people together. It's a great conversation piece like that.
But it was also, it felt like a very intense therapy session.
That's what I was saying. Yeah. Like you just had a therapy session, exactly. That you're talking to a therapist, and to your point, I don't know anything about you people. I'm the most vulnerable person here.
Right. And if you when you watch the documentary, if you pay attention, as the documentary moves on, you can see my eyes get redder and redder and redder, because there's a lot of parts where I was just like really they made me cry a lot. And
take a pause. Yeah. But and it's because you're sharing incredibly meaningful and like you said, helpful. stories of your journey, that you're not alone in that journey.
Correct.
But it's that a lot of people don't discuss their lows in public. Yeah. So I'm glad that you're sharing. He is Chef Gregory Leon, subject of Humble Kitchen, a documentary series that you can start streaming tomorrow on Todos Media. Or Todos Media is the producer. No, Watch Todos.
Watch Todos.
Is the website.
Is the website.
We're going to continue this conversation. We'll hear an excerpt and also find out who else is in this documentary with you. That's shining a light on Milwaukee's culinary scene and all the impact that you've had. Stay with us. More about Humble Kitchen on What's on Tap.
This is What's on Tap with Sandy Max.
There's so many other people out there that you could be interviewing right now. My drug use didn't really start until like I was way into my 30s. And I find myself on the corner of 4th and Market at like, I don't know, 2 in the afternoon with nowhere to go. And when I say nowhere to go, it doesn't mean that I didn't have any plans. It means I had nowhere to go. And I can't explain to you what a horrible feeling that is.
That is the voice of Chef Gregory Leon, and that is how the documentary Humble Kitchen starts, with that almost confessional type of story. Gregory Leon is in the studio with me. How does that feel to hear that portion? You know, and when you watch the documentary, knowing that that's how it starts?
I was really surprised that that's how they start. They start with a bang. But, you know, let's get it all out there, I guess, from the get-go. It's kind of like the hook. But, you know, to listen to those words and to watch myself say it, it really takes me back to that feeling of, like, despair and not having a place to go. Like, I was in that clip I'm talking about, how at that moment in time I had nowhere to go, but not like I didn't have plans. I just had nowhere to go. Like, I had no place of my own, nowhere to go. And it's a pretty gross feeling.
Look where you are
now. And I'm grateful that, you know, I get these chances to revisit that feeling in a way, because I'm like, okay, this is, what am I going to continue to do with my life to make sure I never feel like that again? And how can I help other people not feel like that?
And without giving away too much of your journey, what's the summary of Gregory's childhood journey and how you get to Milwaukee? The summary.
The summary, born in the U.S., moved to Venezuela when I was 5. Moved back when I was 19, was out in California for 18 years, and then landed in Milwaukee. And there's a lot of stuff that happened in there.
Yeah, exactly. But
that's the timeline.
Yeah, for people who want to know that. And one of the things that struck me about your journey is you embarked on a lot of your experiences solo.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely solo. Talk about that kind of independence and that kind of decision making.
I mean, it's a lot easier to make decisions on what you're going to do with your life when you're by yourself. You know, you don't have to take other people into account. And I don't know. I like to travel by myself, I guess. And you know, just me and my dog.
Because at some point you up and go to Madrid, and then you up and say, I'm not leaving Madrid.
You know, I think which I didn't end up having to come back. But I think also, you know, while living in Venezuela, my father worked for an oil company, and he got transferred quite a bit. So we had to move every couple of years. So I think that kind of conditioned me to be like, it's okay, let's move. You know, and I've learned, you know, the first time I moved away from a place where I had really good friends, I was like, I'm really worried I'm going to lose contact. And what I've learned is that those friends that are really meaningful, the people that are really stuck with you, who have a real strong bond with you, you're going to be in contact with them no matter where you live.
Well, and that's the contrast of the other thing that I noticed. So I noticed that you're solo, you're a go-getter, you're resourceful, you make things happen. But now on the other side, talk about community, because you've got a healing process after the loss of your mother, after you're getting over substance abuse and coping with that, you're becoming a chef. The fact that your restaurant is built by people who care about you, who've been to your pop-ups and will come in and paint, like,
yeah, community. That was really surprising to me.
And you have a restaurant that people have gravitated to now for over 10 years. Talk about that sense of community in contrast to you being this solo dude.
I mean, I think as chefs and restaurant owners, we have a duty to make the community around us better. The days of being a famous chef who just makes nice food that tastes good and looks good on a plate, I think, are behind us. I would like to think they're behind us. I think we have a responsibility to our community to help them and help the people in our community. I don't know. It's just my parents always told me it's good to help people. So, you know, I never intended Aunt Melinda to become the community center it has become, but it makes me very happy knowing that it has and that a lot of people, that it's an important place for a lot of people for many different reasons.
What are some of those reasons you think that it's resonated?
I think, you know, people feel comfortable. They feel at ease there. I think they genuinely enjoy the people that work there. It's a place where people can feel safe. They can come and be themselves. They know nobody's going to judge them or look at them weird if they're on a date with somebody of the same sex or a different skin color or whatever. You know, it's a pretty safe space.
And it's got to be good food. People don't show up to a restaurant just because of the ambiance.
The food's very good. I will say that. I don't like the
You can be proud of that.
I'm proud of it. And I don't like to toot our own horn, but I feel like we've got some really good food.
Well, to be recognized by the James Beard Awards 4 times now?
Yeah, 2 finalists and 2 semifinalists, yeah.
What does that feel like when those nominees come out? Like, is that something you look forward to? Is that something that's a buzz in our community?
It is a buzz in our community, and I do look forward to it. You know, it's great to be recognized by people that you admire and by people who you think are knowledgeable in the field that you work in.
Know
what they're talking about. And it's also, you know, it is also a reflection on what an amazing team we have there. I don't do everything there, and I couldn't do this by myself, so they deserve as much recognition as I do.
Back to community. Aunt Melinda, about to celebrate their 11th anniversary. We'll talk about those plans and more about Humble Kitchen, the documentary featuring Chef Gregory Leone that you can stream tomorrow on watchtodos.com. Stay with us for more creative culinary conversation on What's on Tap.
What's on Tap with Sammy Max is back on WTMJ.
We are talking about Humble Kitchen, a documentary series on Todos Media called watchtodos.com is the website. And Humble Kitchen spotlights 4 different chefs and kicks off with our very own Chef Gregory Leone of Aunt Melinda. And you can start streaming this tomorrow. And Chef Leone, not only are you the focus and you are very candid, very open about your journey, your ups and downs with substance abuse and losing your mom, which is something so many people can relate to, and how those affected your life but didn't affect your success and your ability to connect with people and be a great chef.
It did not. It's interesting for me to see how it affected me and my brothers differently, because we were all different ages. So it affected the 3 of us in different ways.
And another way that this is bringing you together, which is interesting.
Oh, they're amazing human beings.
Who else is in the documentary?
So my ex-husband, still very good friend, Ori Leone's in it. They interview him, and they interview Caitlin Cullen, who used to own The Tandem and is also like my sister. They interview Lori Frederick, the amazing writer for On Milwaukee, who's been a friend she talks about it in the documentary. I met her within hours of landing in Milwaukee, and we've just been really good friends ever since.
And which I think is wonderful, because again, you talk about being nominated for a James Beard Award, that you respect that and appreciate that because you know they understand the quality and the intent and the presentation. And Lori of On Milwaukee is another one of those people who has such a breadth of knowledge of our entire culinary scene.
Yeah, she's...
So for her to get excited about you and that Aunt Melinda is the only restaurant providing these types of flavors and what you uniquely bring to it was very special.
It was very humbling to sit there and see what these people had said about me with me not in the room. It was almost a little overwhelming.
Well, and knowing how open and honest you were, that they were encouraged to do the same.
Yeah. And then also Nell Benton, who used to own The National, who I like to refer to as Aunt Melinda's godmother, is in it a lot too. And then my old sous chef, Ethan, is interviewed.
So it really is a great representation, not just of you, but it also showcases to anybody watching what Milwaukee's vibe
is. Definitely.
And what the scene is. And I'm trying to avoid all spoilers, but I will tell you that dog lovers will enjoy this episode of Humble Kitchen.
They will. And bring a handkerchief or some tissue, especially when I'm talking about the dog.
Gee,
that dog was amazing. It's hard for me to talk about that dog.
Let's just end briefly with the friend that encouraged you to move to Milwaukee. I mean, strongly encouraged you to move here. Why did he think Milwaukee was such an ideal city for you?
I think his main motivation was that I'd never come to visit him before. And he's like, come visit. So I think there was a little selfishness there. But then at one point he did say, there's some really good restaurants here. You need to come try them. And he was right. Like, Talk about being in the right place at the right time. Coming to Milwaukee exactly at that time was perfect. That was perfect timing.
And I love that your ability to bring some cosmopolitan flavor, but living in Venezuela for nearly 20 years and then living in Madrid, the fact that you are bilingual and can speak to even more people, what a gift that is, and help you be even more successful and connect with more people.
Yeah, I think definitely being bilingual helps a lot, especially in the restaurant industry. But people look at me and they're like, oh, this must be just like some random white guy. And then I start speaking Spanish. They're very surprised.
Can I ask you just a tiny side question?
Sure.
When you speak Spanish in Venezuela compared to speaking Spanish in Spain, there must be different dialects, just
there
like
is.
American English and British English.
When I am in Spain, everybody thinks I'm from the Canary Islands because of my accent, which, funny enough, my dad's family is from the Canary Islands. A lot of Venezuelans, their ancestry is from the Canary Islands. And when I did my DNA, my dad's side, like 40-some percent of it, it says Canary Islands. So maybe that has something to do with it. But yeah, when I go to Spain, everybody thinks I'm from the Canary Islands.
Humble Kitchen is the name of the documentary, streaming tomorrow on watchtodos.com,
correct,
produced by Todos Media.
Yeah.
And really, it's wonderfully edited. It's wonderfully filmed. The story flows. And I'm glad that you were able to bear the scrutiny of being the subject. But I think it really tells your story in an inspirational and meaningful way.
Thank you. I think they did a really good job. It takes a lot of trust to give somebody your life story and let them tell it. But I couldn't be happier with them.
Humble Kitchen. Stream it tomorrow on watchtodos.com. And go see Chef Gregory Leon anytime at Amalinda. Right there on Wisconsin Avenue.
Anytime Wednesday, between Wednesday and Saturday.
Very good. You need a little bit of time off?
Time off in quotations. The restaurant is closed, but we're always doing work.
Well, and happy 11th anniversary on August 1st.
Thank you very much.
He is Chef Gregory Leon. Watch him on Humble Kitchen on watchtodos.com starting tomorrow. And now we go to the WTMJ Breaking News Center. Here is Jen Gregg.
Welcome back to What's on Tap on WTMJ.
Welcome back to What's on Tap, sponsored by Visit Milwaukee. Handcrafted, homegrown, world-class. Discover more at visitmilwaukee.org. And this is action-packed. I just finished a wonderful conversation with Chef Gregory Leon of Amalinda. Amalinda about to celebrate their 11th anniversary on August 1st, and wonderful food. The first time I had Chef Gregory Leon in with me was I had just taken a vacation in Lisbon, in Portugal, and had wonderful food. And I was like, where is there a Portuguese restaurant in Milwaukee? And it turns out that Amalinda really are flavors of that Iberian coast area of Portugal and Spain. And that is what Chef Leon specializes in. So it was fun to invite him in and say, talk to me about the flavors. Talk to me about the food and the influence and what you bring special. So it really is a unique restaurant here in Milwaukee. And Chef Gregory Leon is the subject of Humble Kitchen, a docuseries that will start streaming tomorrow on watchtodos.com. Think Todos, the Spanish word for all. So watchtodos, TODOS.com tomorrow. And Heidi had just texted in asking, like, wait a minute, this sounds really good. What's that name again? And what is the streaming link? So I wanted to make sure I shared that. So thank you to Heidi for texting in on the Siding Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line. Always welcome to be part of What's on Tap, 855-616-1620. And I watched the preview of Chef Leon's episode, and it's about 45 minutes long, and it really is a meaningful, important story to tell. And Chef Leon has lived a life, and he shares and continues to be an inspiration and a culinary leader here in Milwaukee. So Humble Kitchen, streaming tomorrow on watchtodos.com. And also on the WTMJ talk and text line, 855-616-1620, had some fun talking about Summerween, which is a celebration of Halloween in the summertime. And some people are embracing it. I'm calling them weenies for Halloweeny. And some people are going, I'm calling them waiters. They're like, no. We need to wait for Halloween celebrations in October. That's when it happens. So it's been a fun debate. Have taken some texts. And I got another text from Isaiah who said, hey, circling back to the weenie or waiter topic, I walked into Target on Chase Avenue today. They had Halloween decorations right when you walk in. I literally said out loud to myself, too darn early, Target. That is Isaiah in Milwaukee. So thank you for joining in. If you have a summer ween position. If you're a weenie or a waiter, glad to hear from you. I'm here till 9 checking the Siding Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line. Welcome your opinions on summer ween, if you're embracing it or not. And summer, what a summer for murals here in Milwaukee. Bob Uecker, 10 stories tall now, downtown on the north side of the Wintrust building right there at Jackson and Mason. And that was unveiled last month to much hoopla, and wonderful to have Bob Uecker memorialized and looking over the city as of this summer. Mauricio Ramirez spent almost just not quite 2 months painting that 10-story tall mural. And so that was a fun unveiling event. And now a new mural honoring Henry Hammer and Hank Aaron was revealed yesterday in Bronzeville. It's at MLK and Burleigh in the Harambe neighborhood. And it's Hank Aaron leaning on his bat, a rear view of him, but it is, whereas Bob Uecker is very photorealistic portrait of Uke in the broadcast studio at the stadium, this is lots of patterns, and you can see Hank in his uniform with his number, but it's just interesting that it is much more artistic and almost looks like textiles. And that's because the artist, Rosie Petrie, is a textile artist. And so she is the one who designed this beautiful mural. And not only is it beautiful and inspiring and textured, it has warmed the heart of Hank Aaron's widow. Billy was at the event yesterday. And so was Bud Selig, former commissioner and longtime friend of Hank Aaron. And why did they do the unveiling yesterday? Because 50 years after Hank Aaron hit his historic 755th and final career home run in Milwaukee, a great reason to bring the community together. The mayor was there talking about how Hank Aaron has inspired generations, and it was official Hank Aaron Day yesterday. Henry Lewis, Hank Aaron Day with the proclamation, and that 755th home run, July 20th, 1976. And that really was baseball's all-time home run record for over 30 years, and still one of the game's defining moments. And Bud Selig, like I said, was there, and Commissioner Emeritus Bud Selig, and who's responsible for the Milwaukee Brewers being right here in Milwaukee, and was around for a lot of Henry Aaron's Brewers and Braves career. This is what Bud Selig had to say about Hank Aaron's legacy.
It's more of a privilege for all of us to remember Henry not only for the home runs and the records, but what he gave to this city, what he gave to our game, and to everybody else. I will always be very grateful.
That's just so heartwarming. And Billy Aaron, Hank's widow, is just a doll, and she for her to be so excited and honored and delighted that Henry Aaron's legacy continues, asked her, this is what she had to say about the mural yesterday.
What a beautiful representation of Henry Lewis Aaron, and how gorgeous it is, and how much he would have loved it, I wish he could have been here to see it. It was sort of a religious experience, really, to see it for me. And it's always going to be in my heart. And I think that's a wonderful gesture of what a special man he was.
It's just so sweet to hear that love still in Billy Aaron's voice. And another thing that she said, thanks to Nizer Spencer, our WTMJ reporter who was there and covered this mural unveiling of Henry Aaron in the Harambe neighborhood. And I also love that Billy told Nizer that Henry Aaron, he'd love it. And then he'd go home and brag about it. He was so in love with Milwaukee generally. And for all the love and attention that we gave him here in Milwaukee, as I said, I just miss him so, because he loved the city and he loved coming here. And I know when I tell the children about this that everybody will wish they'd been able to get here to see it. But I know they'll be coming at some point just to see that mural. I just think that is so heartwarming. It's nice that truly genuine affection and adoration that between Hank Aaron and Bob Uecker, two people who made sure that Milwaukee was their home. And if you want to see this mural of Hank Aaron, WTMJ.com, we have a full article there, but it's on the side of the Clinton Rose Senior Center at the corner of MLK and Burleigh in that neighborhood there. And the artist, you might be wondering, not Mauricio Ramirez in this case, Rosie Petrie. And she has done a few murals in a series reflecting on the history of the men and women Negro Leagues. And this is the third one overall to spotlight Henry Aaron by himself because he holds that home run record. And the artwork was installed by Milwaukee artist Gerald Moolah Bread Williamson Jr., who has a name around town and will now be a permanent public tribute outside the Clinton Rose Senior Center. And next time you come for a Brewers game, get into the city, put two Milwaukee photo stops on your list. Stop by the Hank Aaron mural, get a photo. Stop by the Bob Uecker mural and get a photo. You will have the full Brewers legend experience there. I'm Sandy Maggs. Thanks for hanging out with me on What's on Tap. Your chance to win free concert tickets next on What's on Tap.
You're listening to What's on Tap with Sandy Maggs on WTMJ.
I bet that sound catches some of your ears. That's the band For King and Country, and they will be performing at the Wisconsin State Fair August 10th, the Bank 5-9 main stage opener. Rachel Lampa, and it's going to be a concert experience. If you haven't seen For King and Country yet, they are one of the most successful Christian pop acts in the world, and they are known for their arena-style productions. And their brothers, Joel and Luke Smallbone, have racked up Grammy Awards and known for inspirational, uplifting music. God Only Knows, which is not the Beach Boys song, who, if you didn't hear earlier, unfortunately, the Beach Boys have had to cancel their closing night show at the Wisconsin State Fair. No act will be rescheduled for that August 16th. But August 10th, that's the night you want to be there to hear performed live. God Only Knows, Burn the Ships, Joy Priceless Together. And you'll see incredible lighting, drums, storytelling, a really theatrical production. So more than just a show, you know, where people will be standing around playing their instruments. This is going to be a real experience. And whether you're a longtime fan or just enjoy great live music or you've heard For King and Country are great to see, this is going to be one of the most unique shows coming to the State Fair this summer. Another great opportunity to make a full day out of the Wisconsin State Fair because your concert ticket includes admission to the fair. So hang out, stroll the cow barns and the expo center, and then go see the show on the Bank 5-9 main stage on Monday, August 10th for King and Country. And would you like to win a free pair of tickets? I can help you with that right now on the Siding Unlimited WTMJ Talk and Text Line, 855-616-1620. Caller 10 for August 10th for King and Country. 855-616-1620. Caller 10 would love to set you up with a free pair of tickets to see For King and Country August 10th at the Wisconsin State Fair Bank 5-9 main stage. Good luck.
This is What's on Tap with Sandy Max.
They are For King and Country, and they will be back at the Wisconsin State Fair on August 10th on that big Bank 5-9 main stage. And big congratulations to Lisa from Sussex, who just won a free pair of tickets to see For King and Country at the State Fair. And if you're like, oh man, I wanted to win those tickets, guess what? You have another chance to win before 9 o'clock here on What's on Tap. And you have chances to win tomorrow and Friday on What's on Tap. So maybe set your phone alarm for 6 o'clock so you don't miss out on the show. And yeah, they last played at the Wisconsin State Fair, I think it was 2023. And their last show in Wisconsin was at Fiserv Forum in 2024. So we are ready to welcome back For King and Country and their big stage presentation. It's not it's not quite Trans-Siberian Orchestra. It won't be Columns of Flame and, you know, all sorts of stuff, but it is more than just a band rocking out on stage. They really do pay attention to their presentation and want to give you that immersive feeling. So For King and Country, circle that on your calendar, August 10th at the Wisconsin State Fair Bank 5-9 main stage. Another chance to win tickets before 9 o'clock and tomorrow and Friday here on What's on Tap. And Wisconsin State Fair, I can't believe it's coming up so quick. When you go to their website, they have a countdown and it's like, oh my goodness. So yeah, tomorrow is going to be 2 weeks away from the Wisconsin State Fair. Are you ready for food on a stick? Are you ready for strolling around and seeing the horses? One of my favorite things is going to the Coliseum and seeing the, I think they're called Percherons, but they're the big, they're not quite Clydesdales, but they're really big, sturdy horses, and they are in teams and they prance around. You hear the jingle of all the harnesses and all everything, and there'll be like teams of 4 and 6 and 12 carrying, pulling carts around and carriages around. And I'm fascinated by that competition in the Coliseum and look forward to it every year. There's also the bunny hopping contest, which I always seem to miss because they're during the day, but I think this could be my year to see some bunny hopping, darn it. But, you know, the huge Ferris wheel in the Midway, there's a lot to be excited for when you get to August 6th through the 16th are the dates of the Wisconsin State Fair this year. And of course, yes, somebody's got to say it, Cream Puffs, that's its store as well. So get ready for the Wisconsin State Fair. Film fun is on the way. Reviews of The Odyssey, spoiler-free, from some familiar voices here on WTMJ, and American Madness. What is it? It's a book that has become a documentary. You will meet the author, T. Krulos, and find out how you can see American Madness. Stay with me on What's on Tap on WTMJ.
Your need-to-know cultural snapshot of Wisconsin and beyond. This is What's on Tap with Sandy Max, sponsored by Visit Milwaukee. A deep dive into all things intriguing, riveting, and entertaining. Now, here's your host, Sandy Max.
Welcome to this bonus hour of What's on Tap. I am excited to share with you American Madness. Author T. Krulos, an historian of all kinds of interesting local facts and also strange phenomenon and unusual history. He has written a book called American Madness. It is a nonfiction book that has become a documentary that you can see next week at the Avalon Theater. And he will join us to share that. But in other film news, the film of the summer, at least so far, is The Odyssey, directed by Christopher Nolan, that Christopher Nolan of Oppenheimer, and starring Matt Damon. This really could be the movie of the year. I saw it, spoiler-free, I can tell you that I enjoyed it. And my one-word spoiler-free review, harrowing, but in the good way, like keeps you on the edge of your seat. It is one of those stories like out of the frying pan into the fire, you know? So that was what I got out of it. And keep in mind, I saw it Thursday night at 10 o'clock. I was a tired gal, so I was a little worried I'd spent $23 to go to an IMAX theater and fall asleep, and I didn't at all. So I can say that's a testament to how interesting and exciting the film was. I did ask some of the other folks that I am in contact with for their spoiler-free reviews. Here's WTMJ's Eric Bilstad.
Majestic. It is big. It is large. It is an epic film. But also there are aspects to it that are fairly simple. What Christopher Nolan does is he does Christopher Nolan really well. The director just knows how to do these types of movies. So he layers. He has nonlinear timelines. He does all of the things that make it large and majestic and big.
And this is WTMJ's Nizir Spencer's one-word spoiler-free review.
One word, extravagant. I think it's Nolan's best work since Interstellar. I think Oppenheimer was great, but I think Interstellar is the peak of powers for Nolan. I love that movie. It was, the storytelling was beautiful. The acting, everyone, every actor in that movie, actress, Anne Hathaway specifically, was absolutely astonishing in that movie. I think it's the movie of the year, movie of the summer so far. I'm excited for everyone to see it.
That's WTMJ's Nizir Spencer. It's not just the guys going to see The Odyssey on opening weekend. The next voice you hear, WTMJ fans, one you'll recognize, former WTMJ newscaster Melissa Barclay, now a senior communication specialist in the Office of Marketing and Communication at Marquette University. She stays in touch with us, and I asked her to share her spoiler-free review of The Odyssey.
My one-word spoiler-free review would be immersive. I was not only captivated by the narrative, but the way it was filmed on 70 millimeter IMAX cameras and the practical effects rather than CGI. That was really noticeable to me. I would say this is a movie that I like to call one that sort of sticks to your bones in a way that you know, several days later, you're still thinking about it. It's been a continuous conversation at my workplace. And I keep thinking about certain scenes over and over again, sort of connecting them to struggles in my life and struggles that really everyone can relate to. The desire to go home as an adult, but the home isn't the same as you remember as a child. And you're not the same person. Everyone you know isn't the same. The question that keeps ringing through my head is, you know, can you really ever go home to the home you once knew? And I talked to my brother, who's a veteran, about Odysseus's struggles with his moral injuries from being in battle, making survival decisions that conflict with his personal belief system. I think that's something that a lot of veterans will be able to relate to.
Now, that's an insight from former WTMJ newscaster Melissa Barclay, now a senior communication specialist in the Office of Marketing and Communication at Marquette University. And Melissa connected with me last week. She said, there's a Marquette English professor that you should talk to because she really knows all about Homer's epic story, The Odyssey, and I think she'd be a good conversation. So I had a great conversation with this English professor. Dr. Leah Culligan-Flack joined me last week, and it only made sense to invite her back for her review of the film. See how it compared to her expectations. Exceeded, disappointed, or nailed it? We'll find out right now. Leah, welcome back to What's on Tap.
Hi, Sandy. How are you?
I am great. What's your one-word, spoiler-free review of The Odyssey?
Enchanting is what I would pick.
Ooh.
Enchantment was kind of a word in Homer's world to describe storytelling at their highest or at its highest. And I think that Christopher Nolan made an enchanting film that lures us in, that feels dangerous and exciting and something we better pay attention to.
I'm so glad that you explained that enchanting is actually a word that would be used in this play because, or in this story, because as an English professor at Marquette University, I am interested in your perspective since you know the literature so well. I just went in going, yeah, I read it ages ago. I know of it. And I know some of the characters and the gods, but I'm just in it for the journey. You know, wasn't looking more critical. What are some of the other takeaways? You heard Melissa talking about the journey as a veteran, and you'd mentioned PTSD as kind of that angle, an aspect of Odysseus's journey in your studies.
What a beautiful review she just gave. I have to say, I absolutely agree with her. This exceeded my expectations in every way. I think that, you know, as an adaptation, it's stellar. All good adaptations start with great readings, and this was a masterful reading of Homer and with all the texts that were responding to Homer since. So I see echoes of the Aeneid here and Madeline Miller's Circe, a recent novel. It's such a just dedicated reading of the original story. So I've been reading online, you know, about, you know, people having different feelings about the changes that Nolan made to the original story, but I think they bring out Homer's themes in a way that we feel them much more deeply. And so we see, you know, Matt Damon does Odysseus so beautifully as the kind of tortured war veteran. And we feel his pain and his suffering and his endurance for the whole thing. I thought that that was just absolutely outstanding.
The film does a great job of illustrating the tough decisions that have to be made as a leader.
Yes, absolutely. And the fact that he has to pay the cost of those decisions for his entire life, right? He can't leave those behind on the battlefield. And I thought that was such a sensitive and smart depiction.
And it's such an escape. It's such an adventure to know that this was filmed in 6 different countries over 90 days on water in ruins and in a cave. Like, I really felt that grittiness.
Absolutely. I've been watching interviews with the actors, and they've talked about what a harrowing feat making the film was. And I feel like this is a film where you can feel the humanity and the human craft and effort that went into it. And I feel like that's the perfect 2026 version of Homer in a story whose first word in Greek is andra, which is man. I think that we felt this is such a human film, and we can see it in the performances. Something that I read was that the IMAX cameras can only film for 3 minutes at a time. And so they would have to pause in the middle of these kind of anguishing scenes. One that was noteworthy was that final scene between Penelope and Odysseus. And they would have to just stay emotionally in that space for 20 minutes while they change reels.
Yeah, that's...
I think you can feel the effect of that and just the skill of everybody involved in it.
Indeed. She is Marquette English professor Leah Flack. Thank you so much for joining me. It's been so much fun hearing your perspective. And will you make sure that your students see The Odyssey? Will that be your first question on the day, first day of class?
I'm currently teaching a class on war, and I already sent an email saying, everybody go see this.
Very.
What are your thoughts?
That's a good assignment.
Yep. Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Leah. I wish you a very happy rest of your summer and enjoy the classes that you are teaching now and have a great semester ahead at Marquette.
Thanks, Andy.
Thanks, Leah. American Madness. What is it? How you can lay eyes on it. That's next on What's on Tap.
What's on Tap with Sandy Max is back on WTMJ.
Welcome back to What's on Tap, sponsored by Visit Milwaukee, handcrafted, homegrown, world class. Discover more at visitmilwaukee.org. And I am excited to bring you one of the most fascinating documentaries of the year. I think I can say that wholeheartedly, not even seeing it yet, but knowing the author and knowing the author has written the book that the documentary is based on. It's called American Madness, and T. Krulos joins me in the studio. I call you an author and a historian. You are so encyclopedic of a lot of Wisconsin knowledge that you and I have talked about before, some cultural knowledge, whether it's the paranormal or myths and lore here in our state. But even beyond that, you really have dug into all sorts of interesting stories. You've written 5 nonfiction books, and you're not finished yet.
Yeah. I know a lot of stuff about strange things.
Yeah. It's better if you introduce yourself like that than me. Here's T. Krulos. He knows a bunch of stuff about strange things. So tell us about American Madness, the nonfiction book that you wrote that now has become a documentary that we can see on July 30th, next week at the Avalon.
Yeah, very excited about that. So this story has been with me since 2010. So it's been a long time. But back in 2010, I was working on my first book, which was about a subculture called Real Life Superheroes. And these are people who actually adapt their own superhero personas, and some of them do like charity events, but some of them actually like go out and patrol looking for crime. So I was very fascinated by this topic. I met some local Milwaukee real life superheroes, and I was like, this would be a great book. So I started working on it, and I had a blog that I was maintaining, and I would, you know, write about some of the people I met and what I was working on. And one day I got an email from a guy named Richard McCaslin. And he said, I found your website, and I think you might want to talk to me because I was a real-life superhero way back in 2002, and I dressed as my superhero persona, the Phantom Patriot, and I raided the secret society called the Bohemian Grove, and I actually went to jail for that because I set that place on fire. And I was like, what?
I was just going to say, and that's going to be surprising. And did your spidey senses tingle going, this is legit or this is way out there?
Well, something that hooked my interest immediately, because that was my first reaction, was this guy is telling me a lie. I'd encountered people who told me stories that were obviously not true about their real life superhero heroics. So my first instinct was this guy's probably pulling my leg. But he said that he had an entry in Wikipedia, so I went and looked at that.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. And it says something about this place, the Bohemian Grove, so I started reading about that. And I just fell down this rabbit hole. I read everything I could about Richard McCaslin, which there wasn't a lot online at that time, but there was a little bit. I read about this place that he was fascinated with. I learned that he was very much inspired by a guy named Alex Jones, who we all know today, but back in 2002 was somewhat unknown.
And Alex Jones, known not well, but for his conspiracy theories.
Yeah.
So now you have a superhero who is influenced by conspiracy theories.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, I quickly figured out, okay, this is a conspiracy guy. And I was curious, though. I was very curious because it's a very unusual case. So I kind of cautiously replied to Richard, and I was like, yeah, I'll hear your story. And we started communicating, and I found him to be a very interesting person. Not a person that I agree with on almost anything, but very interesting in how he saw the world. So I stayed in contact with him up until 2018, and then I thought I had enough material. I finished the book, and it was published in 2020. And Eric Hayden, who is the director of the documentary, read the book, and we started talking about a documentary in 2021, and it just got finished earlier this year.
I can see why it compelled you to follow this story, and yeah. I can only imagine what the pages of your book entail, and now what the frames of film entail to flesh out
more
of the aspects and details.
Yeah, it's a really wild story. It's a weird story, but I think it's a very relevant story in this day and age.
We'll talk about why it's relevant and some of the weird and wild aspects of American Madness with author T. Krulos. And are you a producer on the documentary?
I am a producer.
Okay. Yeah. And producer on the new documentary, American Madness, screening next week, July 30th at the Avalon. Stay with us on What's on Tap.
Welcome back to What's on Tap on WTMJ.
American Madness. It's fun to say. It's the title of a new documentary that will be screening July 30th at the Avalon. And T. Krulos, who wrote the book that American Madness, the documentary, is based on and is a producer on the film, is in the WTMJ studio with me. And summarize, you just kind of took us through the main character of mm-hmm. American Madness. Who is it about and what are the themes that really compelled you to write a book in the first place called American Madness?
Yeah, so I think when I first started talking to Richard, I was like, this guy has got to be like the fringe of the fringe. Like, he believes in every conspiracy theory, pretty much.
And so, this is Richard McCaslin, who he was a Marine.
Yes,
at one point, and then assumed a superhero persona.
Yeah, he is always fascinated with comic book superheroes since he was a kid. That was really kind of his escapism in life, was he liked to read comic books. He joined the Marines because he thought it would be superhero training. He went to stuntman school because he wanted to be an action movie star. So he went to a stunt school, and then he got a job, actually, where he portrayed Batman at the Six Flags stunt show. This was the late 90s. So, you know, Batman Forever had come out, and they had made a stunt show based on that. And so he got to portray Batman. That was kind of a highlight of his life. But then he went through a very dark period of his life. He lost both of his parents. He was an only child. He lost his job because he was taking time off to visit his parents. And I think he was in a very vulnerable place, and he was looking for something to fill that void in him. And that's when, you know, some people might turn to drugs or alcohol or religion. And he just happened to discover Alex Jones and became very interested in conspiracy theory. And he decided that this was going to be sort of his superhero mission, was to fight against the deep state, the New World Order, whatever you want to call it. And he discovered that they have this place where they have summer retreats, and they actually just had it this last weekend. The Bohemian Grove. It's like a campground club for very powerful, rich men. And it's kind of secretive because it is a secret society.
I would say I hadn't heard of it before.
Yeah. I think what weirds conspiracy theorists out is they have a giant statue of an owl inside of this camp. And they do like an opening party ritual where they'll wear druid robes and They
it's a secret
kinda,
society, T. Yeah, of course, exactly. Yeah. Things that you would do, handshakes, whatever.
Exactly. That used to be very common. I don't think people realize that you would you need something to do, so you would form these clubs.
I
said,
reminded of the Skull and Bones,
like,
that
yeah,
we used to hear.
Yeah, very
of.
Similar. Yeah. Skull and Bones is like the junior version of Bohemian Grove. So
Richard McCaslin thinks he's going to make a difference.
Yeah, and so he put on his costume. He had a bunch of weapons. And
he was the Phantom Patriot was his superhero persona.
He's got
persona.
Like this skull mask, and he had all these weapons he was carrying, and he raided this place because he thought he was going to save people that were going to be sacrificed in front of this owl statue. But instead, you know, he had a very tense standoff with the police, and they arrested him, and he spent about 6.5 years in prison and then was released on parole, which is when I met him after that.
Because then he reached out to you because you were actually doing research on people who like to be superheroes and want to fulfill that part of their life. And then he reaches out to you with these fantastical claims. You start corresponding.
Yeah, and in this correspondence, he tells me a lot of stuff he believes in, and a lot of it was really far out, I would say, by anyone's standards. He believes, you know, a lot of world leaders are reptilian aliens in disguise. And, you know, he has all these theories about Satanists and the political parties. And you know, so at first I was like, wow, this guy is really far out there. But then, you know, as I'm going along talking to him, I'm talking to other people. And I had so many people say, this guy sounds like a guy I used to work with, someone who lived down the street with me, from me, my ex-boyfriend, you know, my uncle or my aunt, you know. I was like, wow, there are actually a lot of people who have similar beliefs to Richard. So I became very curious as to where this all came from.
I was going to say, how are they finding out? Because this was 2002?
Yes. So he was, you know, very old school in that this is kind of, it's not pre-internet, but it's before things really kind of went viral and were shared, you know, it was before YouTube.
Gosh, I would say Facebook and Twitter were starting like 2009. So.
Yeah, later. So, you know, you had to, the way he discovered it was a very old school way. He happened to catch Alex Jones would sometimes be on Austin Cable Access. He had a cable access show.
Wow.
Which is kind of the, before you could do a YouTube show, if you wanted to do a show, you had to do it on a cable access.
On a low power, channel on your over-the-air system.
Yeah, so it was much different then. And, of course, the ease of creating your own show and spreading it now has accelerated spreading conspiracy a lot. But he was, I like to say, he was kind of Alex Jones' patient zero. He was one of the first people to take him really seriously and kind of act on some of the things Alex Jones would say. Since then, there's been, unfortunately, other people who get inspired by these conspiracies. They get a little obsessed about it. And next thing you know, they're raiding a pizza place in Washington, D.C. or, you know.
Things get dangerous.
Yeah, right.
Because there's no filter, and they're encouraged by the other people who are believing that. So this is obviously a lot of themes in American Madness, the book that you researched and wrote. And now it is a documentary that we can see next week at the Avalon on July 30th. I want to talk to you more about the themes and some of the other work that you do when writing a book like this. Like, you have to be in a different mindset, I would think, than other research that you would normally, you know, go to the library and check out books. So he is author T. Krulos. We will continue our creative conversation about American Madness on What's on Tap.
You're listening to What's on Tap with Sandy Max on WTMJ.
Welcome back to What's on Tap, where my guest is author T. Krulos, who has written the book American Madness, all about Richard McCaslin. Sort of my layperson summary, a man who liked to be a superhero, wanted to make good change in the world, but was through a filter of a lot of conspiracy theories.
Yes, yeah.
And then that all of a sudden opens up all these other themes that you have explored in your book, American Madness. And so I'm wondering, since this person was active mostly in getting involved in these conspiracy theories and taking action in 2002. Here we are in 2026.
Yeah.
What are the themes that you see still almost 25 years later that you were exploring in your book, American Madness?
Yeah, well, I mean, one thing about Richard, I didn't agree with a lot of his ideas, but I understood sometimes where he was coming from. You know, he would talk about the political parties being two sides of the same coin. And, you know, we've had a long history of sort of mistrust in the government, sometimes for a good reason, I would say. The government has done some kind of shady programs in the past that, you know, you can see they probably sounded like conspiracies at that time. And then we discovered that they're true. So, and it's also, it was just very fascinating to see like how misinformation spreads and who's spreading it and why, you know. And sometimes, I mean, Richard was very much a true believer in all of this. He believed that these conspiracies were real and he was upset about it. Some people who spread them are doing it for their own personal game. You know, they're doing it because they're hoping they'll get more clicks on their website so they can sell products. So I think those were two of the major themes, was this the mistrust and why is that mistrust there towards our government? And why are people spreading these conspiracy theories? Is it because they actually believe them or because they're trying to, you know, in some cases, make a profit off of it?
So Richard McCaslin, who went as the superhero, the Phantom Patriot, reaches out to you because you are writing a book about people who like to do this, because you discovered there are more people than you expected who like to be their own superhero and make a change.
Yeah.
But now you wind up focusing on Richard McCaslin and the Phantom Patriot. But I'm thinking in all of this correspondence, was it mostly email? Did you talk to him as well? Did you ever meet him in person?
Yes, all.
Yeah.
So at first he was a little paranoid about computers. So he sent me handwritten letters. I fortunately had a P.O. box at that time. So I especially at first, didn't really want to give him my home address. So he sent me handwritten letters. I still have them. He wrote me several of those. Eventually, he did some traveling, and he switched to email. So we did a lot of emailing, and I ended up meeting him three times in person. Last time, I actually went and stayed at his house in Pahrump, Nevada, is where he was living at the end of his life, because I wanted to see what his home environment sort of was and what
you're life writing in the Pahrump. Book that would definitely be enlightening to see. Yeah.
So Pahrump's kind of a weird little desert town. It's where a lot of outsiders end up moving to. For example, a radio legend, the great Art Bell, who hosted Coast to Coast AM,
overnight.
Lived in Pahrump.
Yeah.
He lived there. He broadcasts out of a cave. He had a studio built in a cave in Pahrump. So,
you know how to find the characters. This is your jam, isn't it? Finding these super unusual stories. So, anything else that was adventurous in your overnight stay in Pahrump in McCaslin's home?
Well, I was like, hey, I'm going to come down there and visit you. We can do whatever you want. And I thought he would show me around town. Maybe we'd go to his comic book store. He still went to the comic book store every week to get new comic books. But instead, he wanted me to co-star in sort of a short superhero action movie where these characters went to Area 51 and like confronted the Illuminati. So I was like, okay, if that's what you want me to do, I'll do it. So, you know.
Tell me that makes it in the documentary.
There is a very interesting clip from that in the documentary, yes.
T, I have so many questions for you. When we come back, here's my main question. We'll talk about the documentary when we come back, but my main question is, you're digging in so deep to get to know Richard McCaslin and empathetically listening to him, hearing him out on all the conspiracy theories and all of his plans that he wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
How do you separate that? Did you ever feel that you were going, okay, I really see the validity to that? I know it's a conspiracy theory, but boy, he seems right on all of this. Did you tend to believe?
There's a couple things he told me that I don't think he was wrong about. So Yeah.
That had to have been a heck of a mental exercise for you to try to separate yourself from the subject while still honoring and listening to all that. Then being part of his short film that we get to see in the documentary. Yeah. American Madness is screening at the Avalon next week on July 30th. Author T. Krulos, who wrote the book American Madness that has now become the documentary, is in the studio with me. And gosh, if you have questions, 855-616-1620 is our Siding Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line. Join the conversation about American Madness on What's on Tap.
This is What's on Tap with Sandy Max.
American Madness, a thoroughly researched nonfiction book by author T. Krulos, who is in the studio with me, exploring one man, Richard McCaslin, who also went around as did he have a cape, a caped crusader named the Phantom Patriot?
No cape. It was kind of a jumpsuit with a skull mask. But it was very intimidating, an intimidating costume.
And something, you don't become a superhero if you don't believe in your mission. So. Yeah. So T gets to know Richard McCaslin, and what an Alice in Wonderland journey you have with him as you dig into all of his beliefs and find out in 2002 just how many conspiracy theories that were alive and kicking in the community. And now, 25 years later, with the advent of social media.
Yeah.
It's a big more problem. And more. Yeah. Would you ever, and when you were writing the book, over those 10 years, did you ever imagine that conspiracy theories, that the things that you were hearing Richard McCaslin tell you, would ever be as mainstream as they are?
No, not at all. I was very surprised. I was consistently surprised. And on some level, I still am today. It's hard to even keep up with it. There's so much going on all the time.
As compelling of a read that American Madness is, it is now a documentary that Milwaukee gets to see on July 30th at the Avalon.
Yeah.
LA got to see it first, and tell us what happened in Los Angeles.
Oh, it was a really great moment. Eric Hayden, the director, who did a great job, and Kim Hayden is a producer as well, let me know that the documentary was done and it had been accepted into the LA Film Festival. And I was like, well, I'm going to go out there. You know, it's not every day that a documentary based on your work premieres somewhere.
Yeah, that's lean into the moment.
So we went out there, had a really great reception. It won Best Documentary. It was nominated for Best Picture, which is kind of rare for a documentary to even get nominated. So we didn't win, but it was an honor to be nominated in that category as well.
And what was the audience reception like? Obviously critically acclaimed, but when you're there at a screening, what were people walking out saying?
We had a great conversation. We did a Q&A there. We're going to do one here in Milwaukee after the screening at the Avalon. So really thoughtful questions. Got to talk to people in the hallway after that. And people were reacted the way I think that we were hoping to. There's some moments that are kind of funny, so we got some laughs. There's some that are kind of heavy, so, you know, we could kind of feel the stillness in the room. So it was great because the audience reacted how we hoped they would.
And what do you want audiences in Milwaukee to leave discussing?
I hope that they are, you know, it's a story that a lot of people aren't familiar with. That was one of the reasons that it appealed to me, is because Richard McCaslin is not a household name. He's not very well known, but he has a very fascinating story. So I just hope people are able to experience kind of the emotional roller coaster that I did while I was working on this story. You know, there was times where I just kind of laughed at everything because it can be kind of ridiculous. But, you know, I also thought a lot about, you know, our country's history and why people think this way.
So you will be there at the Q&A next Thursday, July 30th at the Avalon Movie Theater. And for people who would rather read the book or want to read the book and see the documentary, you have a pre-screening event.
Yeah, it's really great because Lion's Tooth Bookstore is less than a block away from the Avalon. So I'm going to be there at 5:00. I'm going to sign books if people want to buy a copy. We're going to do a round of conspiracy trivia while I'm there.
That will be entertaining.
And if people read the book ahead of time, all the answers are going to be found within the book. So you should be able to ace it. And then we're going to walk down the streets of the Avalon and see the screening and do a Q&A afterward.
Have some popcorn. See American Madness. Author T. Krulos, thank you so much for joining me and for continuing to really explore fascinating topics that certainly are not mainstream, but are worth exploring and see what we can take away as lessons or cautionary tales.
Thanks for having me, Sandy. It's always great to talk to you.
A pleasure. T. Krulos, author, and rattle off a couple of places we can read your other works.
If you go on my website, tkrulos.com, you'll find links to a lot of stuff that I've written, including some articles, my other books, stuff like that.
What's the most recent article you've worked on?
The last big one, I wrote a piece on polka for Milwaukee Magazine.
There we go.
I just kind of explored polka culture. A lot less heavy than conspiracy theory culture. So.
Told you, that's why I call you author and historian. T. Krulos, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next, your chance to win free concert tickets for King and Country at the Wisconsin State Fair.
What's on Tap with Sandy Max is back on WTMJ.
That is the sound of the band for King and Country. They will be performing at the Wisconsin State Fair Bank 5-9 main stage on August 10th. And opener Rachel Lampa. And this is going to be a heck of a show if this is your thing. Christian pop music for King and Country, one of the most successful bands in that genre in the world, known for their arena style productions. This is going to be a heck of an experience. And you realize the Wisconsin State Fair is just about 2 weeks away. This is going to be a fun show. You can see the brothers Joel and Luke Smallbone. They've racked up the Grammy Awards and they are ready to bring the inspirational, uplifting music like God Only Knows, Burn the Ships, Joy, Priceless, and Together. And they're known for incredible lighting, drums, storytelling, and so much more. If you would like to be there to see For King and Country August 10th, how about be caller 10 right now. The Siding Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line 855-616-1620. Call 855-616-1620. Caller 10. You will win a pair of tickets to see For King and Country August 10th on the Bank 5-9 main stage. And that does include your Wisconsin State Fair admission. So you can spend the whole day enjoying the fair. 855-616-1620. Caller 10 gets one pair of tickets to see For King and Country at the Wisconsin State Fair. I'm Sandy Max. Thanks for hanging out with me on What's on Tap, sponsored by Visit Milwaukee.